This episode is a bit of a first for Song Appeal, but it kicks off a tradition I think you're gonna love. Every other week, we'll still have the solo episodes like you've been hearing in the last four episodes of just me talking. But we're going to alternate those episodes with interviews with industry professionals like composers, musicians, songwriters, and even researchers and university professors who have important things to say about the tools of songwriting and their psychological effects. I'm Hunter Ferris, and for years I've wondered, why do we like the music we like? So in today's episode of Song Appeal, let's take a look at one reason why we like the work of Gavin Geddes from the mouth of Gavin Geddes himself. In his latest work, Geddes the Sea, Provo-raised Nashville artist Gavin Geddes shows us how going against your expectations can make a song more enjoyable, especially in chord progressions. If you want to see for yourself, check out his work at geddesthesea.com. If you're not sure how to spell that, don't worry. I'll spell it for you at the end of the episode, or you can find a link to his work in the show notes along with a full transcript for this episode at songappealofficial.com/Gavin Geddes interview. And now, here's Gavin Geddes.
Alrighty. Hello, Gavin. This is Hunter Ferris. Welcome to the show. Just to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Yeah, I started a band in Utah, did okay out there, and then I decided that I wanted to pursue music professionally as an artist and as a producer, and so I moved out to Nashville, and since living here, I've worked with a lot of songwriters, and I've actually started a course teaching songwriters music theory and how they can write better songs. Along with pursuing music personally as an artist and in a band. So yeah, that's what I'm up to right now.
Alrighty. So, the chord about making better songs through better music theory. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? How exactly did you decide to make a class or teach that?
Yeah, I think it kind of came from, I was trained, in music theory, when I was 15, I took a college level course in high school and I did really well there. And music theory since then has just kind of been a part of who I am and how I write music. And, I've moved out here and I met a lot of songwriters. There's thousands and thousands of songwriters in Nashville and a lot of them are very good, but I think a lot of them, they don't have that background in music theory. They don't know exactly what they're doing when they're writing. They just do what sounds good. But I think a lot of them can recognize that, that they use a lot of the same chords, or sometimes a lot of their songs can start sounding the same. And so I just kind of figured that was a market that could definitely benefit from learning more about music theory and learning more about how music works specifically, because a lot of these people don't come from classically trained music backgrounds.
Okay. I can definitely see where you're coming from. That's something I would love to be involved in too. But I'm guessing you've run into a lot of people who feel like songwriting should be purely inspirational.
In Nashville, it's kind of an interesting thing. The songwriting has become such a craft out here that I wouldn't necessarily say that the majority of people believe that it would only be an inspirational thing. I think a lot of people here understand structure, and they understand that songs have forms, and a lot of these people understand, you know, that like an ABA format sells, you know, and they understand that there's a certain format that a lot of pop songs use, and that's the song that they try to write. Because a lot of people, they come out here to write songs for other people, right? Like for other country artists or other pop artists. That's why they come out here.
Okay. So, sounds like they understand basic song structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, how do you think music theory, deeper than basic song structure, stuff like sequences and the pentatonic scale and all the other music theory stuff that you've collected over the years, why do you think that's important for songwriters? I certainly do, too. I'd just like to hear your perspective.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I specialize and I focus on my course is I teach people how to write down what they hear in their head. Because I feel like a lot of people hear music in their head, but a smaller percentage of those people are able to bring it to life and to, you know, make it a reality. And it's just something that kind of comes with time and it comes with training, and I know that it can be taught. And so that's one thing I try to teach music or songwriters out here and people who write music. I try to teach them how to hear something in their head and how to play it on an instrument or how to write it down, in music form. And then another big focus is, chords and structure in the way that, you can make songs more interesting by maybe using a different chord that you would usually use, whether it's making it minor or just changing the quality of the chord and the spelling of the chord to make it more interesting for both the writer and for the listener.
So it sounds like it's a lot of playing by ear, a lot of oral training, a lot of audiation, and a lot of basically how do we mix things up?
For sure. Yeah, one thing I'm working on with my students right now is changing two different chords using the secondary dominants. I don't know if you know much about those or not, but
for the sake of our listeners back home, can you explain what a secondary dominant is real quick?
I can try. It's something. it's a decently advanced music theory technique, but secondary dominants are, I guess I should explain what a dominant is. A dominant is the five chords of a key, or so you have like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, and it's basically a chord that starts on sol, which is the fifth note in the scale. And dominants are important because they're the thing that always can resolve very nicely to the one chord or to the base of the key. And so what secondary dominants are they are chords that are the five chord or the chord that starts on sol of a different chord. So it's like one layer in. It's kind of like Inception. So so if you want to go from like a one chord and go up to a four chord, you can use the five of four, which is actually technically a one chord, but you can make it a seven chord and it'll resolve really nicely to the next chord. And they're really useful because they color up the music a little bit and they make it sound interesting because oftentimes secondary dominants are not in the original key. And so, and you notice that even if you don't know where secondary dominant is, I'm sure as a listener, you can hear when something's just a little bit off or when something is played that you don't expect. And a lot of the times those are secondary dominants.
Okay. I can see that. Moving on from there. So when it comes to your songwriting specifically, how exactly does music theory play into that? What role does music theory play in your songwriting personally?
That's a great question. I'm kind of weird in that I'm very anti-traditional, and so I'm very aware of what typical song forms are and what typical pop formats are and the typical chord progressions that are used.
You know the rules long to break them.
Yes, and that's what I do. A lot of my songs and a lot of the music that I write, I write mainly to entertain myself. I write a lot of my music to kind of say, well, I wouldn't expect this, so let's move to this interesting chord, or let's change to this key, or like one of my songs, my band kind of hates me because I don't really use, the song forms are very confusing. Although the songs are fairly simple, there's one song that goes verse, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, half chorus, bridge, and then a bridge outro, and then an interlude, and then a full chorus, and then another outro. So I don't know. I do that because I think a lot of people are expecting, you know, verse, chorus, and I think it's entertaining to everybody if, you know, you're expecting one thing but you get another thing. I just think it's more fun to listen that way.
Tell me more about that. That sounds like it's kind of the crux of your entire musical career, is subverting expectations, doing things people wouldn't expect. And tell me more about how that entertains people.
Yeah, I think this is kind of going off on a little bit of a different tangent, but in comedy, I watched this documentary on comedy, and they said that basically jokes are just things that we don't expect. You know, they're things that surprise us. And I think it's kind of human nature, when we're surprised in a good way or even in a bad way, you know, like scary movies or something. I think we like to be surprised. We like to have our expectations, in a sense, defeated. And I know, like, if I'm listening to a lot of the music, a lot of pop music or a lot of music that has this same form, I just kind of get bored. And I think that's what made a lot of the great composers back in the day, like, especially Mozart. That guy was such a rebel, and everybody loved him for it, because he broke the rules all the time, and people, whether or not they knew music theory, they could hear that, you know, that he was playing something that they weren't expecting. And I think there's something to be said for being surprised, or there's almost a sense of wonder when you're thinking that a song is going to go a certain direction and it doesn't.
I love that. I love that. Okay. So digging a little deeper into that, do you think there's a difference between a good subversion of somebody's expectations, doing something that somebody wouldn't expect in a good way, and doing something that somebody wouldn't expect in a bad way? Do you think there's a difference between a good subversion and a bad subversion, or do you think all subversion is pretty good in the right context?
I think there are bad subversions. I do think that's possible, and I think that's kind of partially where music theory comes into play. I don't believe that you can really actually break the rules of music theory and have it still sound good, because music theory has so many exceptions to every rule. And I think it's important to know the rules, because it's not that you really break them so much as it is you can, again, kind of use them to subvert expectations. But I think, I don't know, I think there's music out there that people go to really weird chords to specifically to try to make people kind of either have disgust or you know, be weirded out. And I think there's, I can't in good conscience say that it's bad, because I think any form of self-expression is just that. It's self-expression, and it's entirely subjective. And I think that in its own right, and with the artist's intentions, I think that anything can be considered art. And so it's hard for me to say that they're like very, very bad. I just think as far as like what appeals to, you know, the general population, especially for pop music, I think that there are definitely choices that are, you know, better made. I think that there are good and bad choices for pop music specifically. Sorry if that was kind of convoluted.
No, I'm wrapping my head around it. Just give me a second. So sounds like anything could be art. But when you want something popular, when you want it to be commercial, when you want it to be
mainstream, there are a few things that are probably a good idea in order to make something mainstream as opposed to just art for art's sake. I don't mean to say just art for art's sake in a way that's like demeaning or anything.
Yeah, I think, and one thing I teach my students is all music is a question and an answer. That's everything that music theory is based around, everything that we listen to, it's all questions and answers, right? So, like certain chords, like the dominant chord or the five chord, it asks the question, where am I going to go? And there are certain tones in that chord, specifically the third of that chord, which is called the leading tone, which leads up to do. And when you hear that tone specifically, your brain subconsciously knows, hey, this needs to go up just a half step, but it needs to go up to resolve. And in any sense of music, I think that it's all about setting up the question and then answering it. And I think that is the way that, in pop music at least, you can correctly subvert expectation. Because with pop music, it's satisfying, right? To have that question come into your mind through music and then have it answered. And I think that there are different ways to answer it. And through music theory, you can kind of figure out which tones you can resolve to or which chords you can resolve to that are going to be satisfying and that are going to appeal to people. Whether or not they'll be surprised by it is kind of up to what chord you end up deciding to resolve to. But in all of music, and this includes like secondary dominance, this includes non-chord tones, this includes everything in music, is all the question and then the answer, or you know, the chord that holds a lot of tension and it kind of sounds bad, and then the resolution that kind of lets it all go and just feels so satisfying to hear that resolve itself.
I like that. I was actually just about to say that it's the balance of tension and resolution.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So, does your work mostly focus on choral theory, or does it also focus on melodic theory, harmonic? Do you also focus on melodies when you think about music theory, or is it mostly about chords?
Honestly, my journey personally has mostly delved into chords, I think that's kind of. I do think that you can subvert expectation with melodies and harmonies, but for me, chords are a little bit more powerful as far as providing that emotion and providing that tension. I do think that you can definitely have, you know, a tension and a resolution in a melody for sure. But personally, I've focused more on chordal stuff like that, because once you get like a really solid chord progression down, there's, you know, a thousand different melodies that you can put on top of it. So I always focus on that. I make that my foundation. And even like if I do have a melody in my head, because it's, you know, it's one note at a time, melodies are pretty easy to kind of plink out on the piano or guitar or whatever. And so to me, I've always just kind of replayed the melody over and over again in my head and then figured out, you know, what's the most interesting chord progression to use that works with the melody. I think honestly they're equally important, cause you could have a really awesome chord progression and then, you know, stay on do the whole time for the melody and it, you know, I think that they both are very important. But personally, yeah, I focus mainly on chords.
Okay. That begs the question for me. When you're writing a song, do you usually come up with a melody and then come up with the most interesting chords for it, like you're just saying, or do you usually come up with this really awesome chord progression that really does things that nobody would expect, and then come up with a melody that fits with a chord progression, or what's a normal songwriting process for you?
That's a hard question to answer, because it's also partially why I don't really do a lot of co-writes here in Nashville, even though there are a lot of songwriters to co-write with.
Mm-hmm.
Because my process is pretty weird. Oftentimes I hear everything all at once. And so I'll hear the melody, I'll hear all the chords, but on top of that, I'll also hear like every individual part, right? So I'll hear the piano part that's playing its, part of the music, and then I'll hear the synthesizers, and I'll hear the string section, and I'll hear the harmonies that are singing along with the vocals, and I'll hear the drum part, and I'll hear the bass part, and I'll hear the guitar parts. A lot of the times I hear everything all at once.
You do realize that some listener back home is going to think that Gavin Geddes is a genius, right?
maybe, I don't know. I just think, this is something that I want to stress is I know that when I was, 14, and I kind of just started on my musical theory journey, I think that I still had those moments where I heard everything, but I would get so frustrated because I couldn't write it all down. By the time I was able to plink out the melody on the piano, pretty much everything else was kind of out of my memory already. And so one thing that I think anybody can take courage in is aural training, which for some people can be very difficult, because it's not something that's concrete, it's not like it's right in front of your face, it's something you're hearing in your head. But I will say that aural training is something that can definitely be developed. And, I know right now, I'm the best at aural listening I guess I'm at the peak of my performance right now, just because I use it every single day and I practice it every single day. And so what I just said, hearing all those parts at one time and getting them out, is very possible. I think it's possible for anybody. It just takes practice and it takes time.
Alrighty. Let's wrap up a little bit. Couple quick things.
Sure.
I was listening to your track Holy Ghost a little while ago.
Uh-huh.
And there was a really interesting rhythm in the percussion section, and I'm curious, was that rhythm intentional for a specific reason? Was it just, this sounds cool? What was the idea behind that rhythm?
Are you talking like the rhythm that starts out in the very beginning or towards the end?
Right at the very beginning with the claps and the snaps.
I think that was something that, it was just kind of something that manifested itself as I was writing the song. That song is very interesting to me because it's very unlike most of the songs that I've written, because most of the songs I've written, they take me months to finish. And, Holy Ghost took me 2 days. The lyrics and music and everything. And I actually originally wrote it as a poem. I didn't think about putting it to music originally, but, it was just kind of it's one of my favorite songs because it's so personal to me, and it was just kind of an outlet. I was just kind of writing because I was frustrating some things in my life and I just wanted to talk about it. But it's to answer your question about the percussion. I heard a melody in my head and I started writing out this. It really started out with a beat, and then it started out, and then I added chords and everything. But kind of a cool thing to think about that, and one thing that I've really learned about percussion specifically is the same principle applies that we were talking about earlier, which is that question and answer. And if you notice in the bass, it's not straight quarter notes. It's not like dun, 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 dun. It's a dotted eighth note, and then a half note after that. And so what that does is it kind of misses the beat a little bit. And what that does to the listener is you kind of fill that beat in yourself, which either with like nodding your head, or I feel like it really helps you feel the rhythm when you set up a rhythm section to kind of miss certain beats. Because other people, they know where those beats are, and so they kind of fill it in, you know, either with tapping your foot or nodding your head. But that's something I do with a lot of my percussion. I try to kind of make it a little bit irregular so people kind of answer the question themselves with either dancing or, you know, nodding your head.
That's brilliant. All right, let's wrap up real quick. Where can audience learn more about you and your work?
You can find out about my music on getistothec.com. It's G-E-D-D-E-S, the C, like the ocean, .com. Or you could, you know, follow me on Facebook, or Twitter, Instagram, which is getist_thec. And yeah, my music's on every platform pretty much. Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, Apple Music, whatever Jay-Z and Kanye West, thing is. but yeah, anywhere you have music available to you, you can find my music.
Alrighty. Well, we'll be including some links in the show notes of this episode for where our audience can find your music. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem, Hunter. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening. You can find the full transcript for this episode and the show notes, including links to Gavin Geddes' work, at songappealofficial.com/Gavin Geddes interview. You can also find Gavin Geddes' work at geddesthec.com. If you're not sure how to spell that, that's the last name Geddes, that's G-E-D-D-E-S, the word the, and the word sea, as in Mediterranean Sea, .com, geddesthec.com. You can also support Song Appeal on Patreon at patreon.com/songappeal. Again, thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon. In the meantime, have a great day and enjoy your music.